This is Karen Lyle with Latitude 38's Max Ebb on Sailsport Talk. Let's eavesdrop on a conversation between Max Ebb and Lee Helm on Sailing Science.
Question for Lee Helm.
Yeah?
On the weather map, why does the wind always flow clockwise around a high-pressure system?
Okay, Max, so, like, which way does the Earth turn?
There you go with that Socratic dialogue again. Let me think a second. The sun rises in the east, sets in the west, so the Earth must be turning the other way, counterclockwise.
Yes. Now remember, the air wants to flow from high pressure to low.
I didn't know that air had free will. I think of a high pressure system as syrup poured in the middle of a pancake. Air descends to the surface and then spreads out away from the high pressure at the center.
Yeah, the air has momentum and will try to go straight. But the Earth is turning underneath it. So to us people on the rotating Earth, we think the air is going clockwise.
So it's more like maple syrup poured on a pancake on a record player. Is this a Northern Hemisphere record player or a Southern Hemisphere record player?
Northern, for sure. The air totally wants to go straight. But we're looking at it from the spinning Earth, a rotating frame of reference. So to us, it seems like the air is always being flung to the right. This is called Coriolis acceleration, named for the French mathematician J.J. Coriolis, 1792 to 1843. Snap!
I saw that at a science museum. It was a merry-go-round with kids trying to roll a soccer ball to each other. Looked like magic. The ball would not roll straight.
Yeah, but, like, actually, the ball really was going straight. It was the observers who were rotating, so the ball gave the illusion of rolling along a curved path.
So much for magic.
Well, try this in your car. Adjust the heater vent to aim the stream of warm air at your right ear. Then make a sharp left turn, simulating the counterclockwise rotation of the Northern Hemisphere Earth. The air curves to the right and hits you in the face.
But don't cars turn much faster than the Earth turns?
Yeah, for sure, but, like, the Earth is really big, and wind is, like, relatively slow moving on that scale. So think of how far the air moves in, like, 6 hours.
A couple hundred miles.
Yeah, and in that time, the Earth has turned 90 degrees. The air is going sideways. If it started out going south, now it's going west. Coriolis totally dominates, flinging the air to the right.
But the air is really going straight, just like the ball on the merry-go-round.
Yeah, well, the high pressure is trying to push the air out and away from the center of the high pressure system. Coriolis is always turning it back in towards the center. Coriolis and pressure are in balance. And the result is that wind circles clockwise around the high, parallel to the isobars.
Isobars? You mean those lines of equal pressure, like contour lines on a topo map?
Yeah, correct. Except that they're usually missing on those dumbed-down TV maps with little pictures of rain clouds and sunshine with smiley faces instead of real data.
Those would be great maps for radio.
Most visual aids are equally good for radio, Max. Gotta go. Bye.
Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It is Tuesday at 9:40. This is when we talk sailing with our friend Karen Lyle from Sailsport.com. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you doing?
Oh, doing fantastic. And I should let everybody know that we have a guest in studio. It is Larry Jacobson, and he has some merch as well. I'll hold it up for the Twitch cameras. We have here a DVD called Navigating Leadership for Entrepreneurs, another book called Let's Go, The Adventures of Skip and Kinnick, and then another book called The Boy Behind the Gate, How His Dream of Sailing Around the World Became a Six-Year Odyssey of Adventure, Fear, Discovery, and Love. It is Larry Jacobson. Larry, thanks for being in.
Hello. Nice to be here.
How are you? Now, it's very interesting how you got started, because a lot of sailors, let's face it, they come from money, usually. You found a boat in a dumpster. It doesn't get any more American than that.
It was absolutely. I was 13 years old, and this styrofoam whole boat was in a dumpster.
So how does styrofoam sail? That's one I haven't done before.
It doesn't sail all that well. It had a shallow draft, about 11 inches, and it was, I think, 11 feet. And it was a promotional boat. I think Cool Cigarettes used to give them away or something like that.
What kind of sail did it have?
It had looked like a sunfish.
Okay.
That rig. And, I found the rig for sale in the back of, say, Sea Magazine or something like that. This is a long time ago. Yeah. And I began my first boat project. I painted it bright yellow.
Well, and I see that you also had some dinghies, two dinghies that were a Hobie Cat and the other one, that usually these two don't talk to each other, but you had both, right?
Well, it was right. But I was hanging around the surfing crowd and Hobie Alter and all those guys, and the word on the street was Hobie, Hobie, Hobie. So I got a hold of Hobie Cat number 21.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it? And then you went out to Catalina, and if you've done that journey, that seems like a pleasure cruise, but you're actually deep into the Pacific Ocean. You get to a point where you can't see land either way. So what was that like, making that jaunt? So,
yeah, well, it was kind of on a whim that I decided to do that. I was 16, and that's my excuse for the lack of intelligence in doing that, because that's like sailing from here to the Farallons and back. Right. In a Hobie Cat.
Wow.
And you're right down on the water. But it was fast. I mean, it only took about 3 hours.
And then at UC Irvine, they had a sail team. How cool was that down in Orange County?
Yeah, we were second in the nation, actually, in the intercollegiate circuit. And I did a lot of racing, and that was it was a great experience.
Did you lose to those Ivy Leaguers?
We lost to Tulane University.
Oh, wow, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Wow, makes sense.
So then you decided to circumnavigate, and you were 6 years on that adventure. What was it that made you decide to just kind of leave everything and go on a 50-foot boat around the world?
In a word, it was passion. But the dream that I had to sail around the world started when I was 16. As soon as I hit Catalina Island, I thought, oh, this is it. I'm going to keep going. I have to. And I wanted to sail around the world. And Robin Lee Graham on Dove was doing his circumnavigation, and it was in National Geographic, and he inspired me. And so I said, well, someday I'm going to sail around the world. And then life happened, and I put I kept the dream alive for 30 years. So it's 30 years after that I actually sailed out the gate.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book from Bowie Press called The Boy Behind the Gate. And first of all, The Boy Behind the Gate refers to what?
It refers to – well, I guess I'll have to give it away, huh? when I was sailing my Hobie Cat down in Long Beach, I used to ride my bike down to the marinas every afternoon after school. And I would go out and I would practice my races, my starts, and sail around for a little bit. And then I would go put my boat away. I'd hop back on my bike, and I would ride over to where the big boats were docked. And I'd look at all the cruising boats, and from standing up behind the gates, and the gates were always locked. And so I thought, someday I'm going to do this. And then full circle, when we left from out the Golden Gate, turned south, Long Beach was our second port of call, and we were docked at the Long Beach Yacht Club. And one afternoon I was sitting there with a glass of wine in my hand, and I looked up, and I realized that we were docked at the exact same dock that I used to look in at when I was standing behind the gate.
Well, let's talk about this as a six-year odyssey, and there's 4 points here. There's adventure, which I understand.
Yeah.
There's fear, which I understand.
Yes.
So let's talk about the discovery and the love.
Okay. So I think discovery refers really to discovering so much about myself and discovering a new me and realizing the changes that took place in me over the 6 years and the way I looked at the world and the way I look at people and what's important and my priorities in life, and seeing the poorest people in the world, the happiest, and just realizing and recognizing and appreciating and marking the worth of every single day that I'm here.
Hmm. You also encountered pirates on this trip.
Whoa.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there were two places where we saw pirates. First in the Malacca Straits, and we actually outran that boat. It was they were like a diesel chugging along, and we were cruising along at about 10 knots, and then we put up the kite, and we were hitting 12 knots, and that was just, I think, lucked out on that one. The other one, of course, is in Pirate Alley in the Gulf of Aden, and you're sailing from Oman to Yemen.
Mm.
And
Somali
pirates, yes. And we missed the convoy. There was a convoy headed, but we were late in leaving Thailand, so we were late in getting to Oman, so we were late And so we missed the convoy where there's about 25 boats who were going together. And so we ended up sailing alone. And there were no military corridors back then.
It's lawless, right?
It was just lawless. And so we went radio silent and dark. And it's 3 days. It's 3 days to go through this. But we were well offshore. We were as far offshore as we could be without getting near Socorro Island, which is where the pirates are based. And on the radio, we heard our friends who were one day ahead of us, and they were under attack.
Oh.
Two boats. And two pirate boats attacked two sailboats with machine guns and started shooting and the whole thing. And so we just stayed offshore, and we lucked out on that one. They actually one of the owners of one of the boats actually came up on deck with a shotgun, and he shot at the pirates and actually killed this two.
Well, I mean, if somebody's shooting at you, I understand it. We're speaking with Larry Jacobson, who luckily did not have to go through any of that himself. We could do a whole show on that.
Easily.
But we only have a couple minutes. I just want to switch gears a little bit. Your DVD, Navigating Leadership for Entrepreneurs, 11 Proven Keys to Unstoppable Success. So after you've made these discoveries about yourself, you decided to take what you've learned into the corporate world?
I come from the corporate world. And what I learned is that the skills that I used in the corporate world applied to getting a boat around the world. And the skills then that I used getting a boat around the world really apply in business. And so that's kind of what I wrote the book about and the CD is taking my experiences from the sailing trip and looking at how they apply to business.
Wow. You know what we forgot? Where was the love in the Odyssey?
The love was with my partner. And we just became very, very close. I mean, literally, you're living 6 years on a boat, two people. Each year counts as a dog year. So that's 7 times 6 is 42. And, you really learn to appreciate each other and appreciate the differences and the similarities.
Well, as a team sailing this boat around the world, you're tagging one of you is awake when another is asleep on these different watches.
Right.
How did you learn to depend upon each other as sailors? Especially you said something about 30-foot waves or something
like
that?
Yeah, we were in the Red Sea and got caught in a storm that came one day early than the forecast. And it was blowing 55 to 60 knots for 24 hours straight.
Oh.
So it built these seas up to this enormous state of easily 30 feet. And they were coming every 3 seconds, these waves. It was amazing. But, yeah, we did trust each other. We learned to trust each other. It took a while. It didn't happen overnight. But, you know, 3 hours on, 3 hours off, 3 hours on, 3 hours off, you really have no choice but to rely on each other. But we became a well-oiled machine. I mean, we would come into an anchorage, and without saying one word, we would get the whole anchoring process done and efficiently. And all these other people and other couples are looking at us going, how come you guys aren't shouting at each other like everybody else? But we had hand signals. We knew what we were doing, and we could read each other's minds of what was coming next. That's how close you get.
Very cool. And I also want to, as I hold it up for the Twitch cameras here, the kids' book, ages 8 to 12, boys and girls, it's called Let's Go, The Adventures of Skip and Kinnick. And it's kind of a, as you were saying, a kid version of The Boy Behind the Gate.
Right, right. It's and it teaches lots of good morals and good values and lots of good lessons about trust and about friendship and about hard work and earning your way and giving.
What would be your holy grail? I mean, is there something that you still to which you aspire in the sailing world? Like, do you want to do solo or?
I do not want to do solo. I don't understand that. I mean, I did when I my racing was on a Hobie Cat. That was mostly solo.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I go sailing to be to meet people, to be with nice people, to appreciate people. I kind of would mind going around South America.
Mm-hmm. The Cape.
Yeah, and I wonder if I could do that when it wasn't cold somehow.
No.
And I think it would be also nice to get a riverboat and go down the Seine River in France.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah, something a little less rough, probably.
Yes. That's one I would go on. I'd go down the Seine.
Yeah.
Well, and you did something like 50,000 blue water miles in this 6 years, which is quite a lot.
It was 40 on that.
Right.
Yep.
But you also spent time in docks along the way. You weren't just traveling all the time.
Correct, yeah.
What was one of the most memorable destinations that you stopped by when you were on your travels?
So many. I mean, we spent...
Pick one.
Probably the most memorable for us was Tel Aviv.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we went there just for a brief moment, thinking we were going to stay for a week and get fuel on our way to Turkey. And we stayed over 3 months, and we just loved it. It was just an amazing place.
And then maybe we only got about a minute.
Okay.
Biggest dump you visited. Can you say?
Yeah, absolutely, as long as they don't come and get me. But Yemen.
Yeah.
Yeah, the city of Aden in Yemen. There's a description in the book about the fuel dock there that was just unbelievable.
All right. Well, listen, for the books, for the DVD, you can go to Larry Jacobson, S-O-N, LarryJacobson.com. Larry, thanks for coming in. And will you come in after your next Odyssey?
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here. Appreciate
it's such
it.
A pleasure to have you.
And
thank
Karen
you.
Lyle with Salesport.com. Karen, we'll see you next week.
Okay.
All right. Good
we'll
stuff.
We'll see you then.
I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back on Sports Violin.